Thanks for downloading Think from KERA 90.1 Dallas-Fort Worth. You can learn more and support this program at kera.org.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Bill Mercer is known nationwide for his play-by-play announcing for the Dallas Cowboys, the Texas Rangers, Chicago White Sox, and other teams stretching back to the 50s and 60s. He's known around the world for a gig that didn't start until the 80s, when he was named announcer for World Class Championship Wrestling. But he holds a special place in his heart for some of the smallest crowds he has addressed, students at the University of North Texas, where at the age of 81, he is still teaching sports casting every semester. His new book is called Play by Play, Tales from a Sports Broadcasting Insider. Bill, it's such an honor to have you. Welcome to Think.
Hey, I'm honored to be here. As I told folks here, KERA is number one on the radio button, so... It's always you guys.
Do you say that no matter what station you go to? You reprogram in the car on the way over?
I had Channel 8 on my radio. No, this is I try to encourage my students to listen to KERA because I say this is the last of the great news and learning to interview like you do so well and other people. And, they sit there and look at me like,
Well, it's funny. We were talking just before we went on about the preparation that's required
right.
in sports. And I think a lot of people think, what a cool job. You go, you watch games, you just say out loud what you know. Can you talk about what's required before you pick one sport that you've done, a baseball game? What do you
baseball.
Have to do?
Well, that is the one that I'm glad you picked that because I'll have to go back a little bit. Clyde Rembert, who was the president of KRLD when I worked there, started there. He used to say, I have to pay him to eat because he goes out there and sees those games. Dear Clyde. We'd get a hot dog and charge 50 cents to the station on that in those days. Baseball is somewhere between 7 months or longer, depending on which league you're in. And it can be shorter. But as I tell my students and everybody else, you work on it every day. There is no day off for baseball. You have to keep reading all the publications. You read all the information about your team, the other team. You still look for things. I still do some games with Scott Garner out at Frisco. And every day that I'm going out there tomorrow, they're in the playoffs. Go Riders. Every day I look up something, and I build a little catalog, and I can take it out and try to adjust it into that game that day. But having been in the major leagues for 4 years, a cup of coffee, that was a wearing, tearing process of traveling, of investigation every day. And it is very hard work, but it's wonderful work. And if you have a passion for it, you don't notice that until you drop into a seat at the end of the season.
So you have to know, obviously, not just the team that you're sort of traveling
right.
with, but you have to know everything about every other team that comes to play against them.
You have to. If you don't know about it, you certainly have to read about it, investigate. I grew up in a time when we had very little information to come in, and it was very hard to find it. Today, that book is because of the Internet, because I could go back and research things that I'd forgotten. On the Internet, everything is there every day, all the stats, all the biographies, everything you need. So it's a wonderful encyclopedia that somebody invented. And man, I wish I'd have had it back when I was struggling because that would have been great.
There's a picture in the book of something called a spotting board that you used for football.
Yeah.
And it caused me to think about how you did this job before the Internet because you would have to write down, this is all done sort of, looks like a Bic pen and a piece of loose leaf paper. You would write down everybody's position and what's on a spotting board?
Well, and they still use spotting boards today and everybody adjusts one. I have my old spotting board that Charlie Jones and I put together back in 1965, and I had one before that. But anyway, I use the same thing. It has the offense at the top, three deep offense, first line, second line, third line of first team, second team, third team. The line, the wide receivers, and the backfield and the quarterbacks. The bottom of the page, the way I used it, I had the defense of that team, that same team. So I'm looking over at the offense of Miami in the Super Bowl. I'm looking down at the defense of Dallas at the bottom of the page. So I have two spotting boards. I was talking to a gentleman yesterday. He said, well, you have to remember everything. Well, he doesn't know how bad my memory is. So that is a memorization deal. You start working on that spotting board, writing down everybody's names, put in all the stats that you can and all the statistics, and it helps you remember them when you have the game on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And then if your mind goes blank, there it is. You just look at it. So everybody uses a spotting board of some kind.
So it's not even a matter of – it wouldn't be helpful to have someone make one for you. You've got to do it yourself.
Do it yourself. I tell my students, don't let somebody else do that for you. Don't tell your girlfriend to go make it. Yeah, you do that yourself because it is just like rote. You just put it down. I worked – and this is not to glorify this business, but I used to work every night preparing for a Cowboy game. I had something, and I planned it out so that every day I was working on Cowboys or information, and then the other team, making the spotting board, putting all that information together, reading everything that I had that they had, and going out there on Sunday and hope I didn't make a fool of myself.
Sports broadcaster Bill Mercer is my guest. His new book is called Play by Play, Tales from a Sports Broadcasting Insider. So you thought about medical school, you thought about law school, you went to the Navy. How did you end up in journalism?
Who knows? Well, I got to go back to when I was 11 years old, and a lot of my students, Craig Way down at UT is still my kid. When I was an only child, and that may have helped because I'd go out and talk to myself. But I got a baseball spinner game one time, and my old buddy Frank Boggs, who used to be a sports columnist here with the Times Herald, he had the same kind. We talked about that. We were going to play each other, but we can't find them. But I would sit at home, and I'd spin, and, it'd be a base hit. So I'd do my play-by-play. And I started that at 11. Now, that play-by-play was pretty bad, I'm sure. But what it did was it put in my mind that, hey, I kind of know how to do this because I listened to every play-by-play I could find on radio back when I was 11, 12, 13 on. And I must say that that game was the only baseball game I ever did until I broadcast the first Muskogee Giants game that I'd ever broadcast in my life 12 years later. I don't know.
What did play-by-play sound like in the late 30s and early 40s? Different from what it sounds like today.
Yeah, different today because they usually worked by themselves. They didn't have all that statistical information, batting averages and all those they probably had. But they didn't do as much negative reporting. They didn't find as much fault with players as we have today with the color analysts, which I don't approve of, but I'm older. It was more of a classic play-by-play of doing it, putting in a little color. Red Barber was probably the man who did most of that, and when he started with the Dodgers, he came out of Florida, and there was that slight southern accent and all those phrases he used, and he personalized it more, rather like Sinatra personalized songs better than anybody else. It was, I've got a game, the Ice Bowl game on football. The Cowboys played the Packers in that famous game.
67, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was 13 degrees below zero?
Well, it was 35 below that morning. And by the time the game, it was about 13 below. Mm-hmm. It was cold enough to freeze anything, including this coffee or this water immediately. But my friend Mike Capps, who's a broadcaster and a CNN award-winning newsman, says that game has all the particulars of specifics of play-by-play because, one thing, it was cold, and we were just doing the very everything we could see, and my color announcer, Blackie Sherrod, was not one who would just jump in over me. So it was very basic, specific, and down to the facts. And I think that was what play-by-play used to be. It's not that on television. It's sort of a gang warfare on television these days, but that's another media.
Well, it's funny. We should talk about this, and I'm sure we'll get into it more later. But Harry Carey, somebody that you worked with for a while, one reason he just didn't get you, he said, you'll never say anything bad about anybody.
That's right.
He was furious at that.
Yeah, that's right. I love the game. I think he did too. But I wasn't worried about my ego and my paranoia of having somebody working with me. Harry promoted himself, and that was his main effort. Now, I hope I said in the book, I don't remember, but I do tell people, Harry was perfect for the south side of Chicago.
You say he kind of went with the rough and tumble crowd.
Yeah, and he would list all the people in whatever bar they were in having a drink, listen to him while he had his own drinks. So he had a different approach to it. This lovely game of baseball, beautiful. There's just nothing that I can say to describe it. And it's ending for here right now. But it is such a personal thing. Each person stands out. Each person's move, each person's mistake, each person's great moment just stands out. And so I look for that in this game because I see so many great things in it. When somebody makes a mistake, you say, hey, he made an error. He should have done this or that. But it's too beautiful a game to me to sit back and try to destroy individuals on the field. Harry and I never were going to agree on that.
You write that at one point you had to learn standard English instead of standard Oklahoma English.
Yes,
can you talk
I'm an Okie.
About what you sounded like before?
Well, I was from Oklahoma, and when I went in the Navy, I hadn't been outside the state of Oklahoma except to come to visit my relatives in Texas who had a worse southern accent than I had. But I was fortunate going into the Navy that I was on board ship with a bunch of Yankees, and they thought I sounded funny. And I picked up their way of speaking, and I came back and visited family here after the war was over, and they said, you don't sound like you're from Oklahoma anymore. So then I worked at that. I took speech classes. I had a person, my first radio job, who helped me enunciate and spit out the words. So that was a development. Now, what we like to say, have a compliment in radio, is you don't sound like you're from Oklahoma, Georgia, Nebraska, wherever, you know.
Did you always have that sort of ability to project, and did your voice always resonate, or was that something you worked on?
No, I was very shy. You
I know I read that in the book, but I'm not sure. You wrote it yourself. I'm not sure I buy that.
I had to admit that because I was very shy in high school. I had few dates. and I really had a problem with that, and I don't know where it went. I guess the Navy did that to me. I give it credit because it gave me the chance to show I was smart. I developed a personality. Can't use all of it these days in public, but it's there. And then I went to college, and suddenly I started acting and, did all that stuff, and it all began to come out. But in the background is that fear every time you go on, sitting in there waiting to come on here, saying, okay, now I got to do this right. You know, you always have that in the background, and I do anyway, and that fear that I've got to meet people and make a speech or something, but there's that little shyness in there.
So do you think that's what forces you to always be prepared, to never, ever rest on what you learned for yesterday?
Probably so. But I learned to prepare from a great college professor I had at Northeastern in Oklahoma and some other professors I had along the way about preparation for journalism. And I was a journalism radio major, a combo. And then when I came to KRLD and Eddie Barker, whom you've interviewed here, who
Love
says,
Eddie Barker.
Chris is the greatest interviewer. We'd have had her in our newsroom.
What a compliment, my goodness.
Anyway, it just developed, and we knew we had to be prepared, and it was up to us individually. Yeah.
And KRLD was also your first exposure to television. Not exposure to it, but the first time that you had the opportunity to work in TV.
Oh, I was scared to death, really petrified. I'd never I used to sit there. And I'd do a little news break, and I'd stare at the camera, and now here's the news. It was awful. And I had the same. I could do the wrestling pretty well because I wasn't looking at the camera, except when I had to look at the camera. That took a long time to overcome, and it's just one of those things you have to become easy with it, you know.
Lots more with Bill Mercer in just a moment. His new book is called Play by Play, Tales from a Sports Broadcasting Insider. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send email to think@kera.org or you can call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering adults an opportunity to think for credit. Details on the web at smu.edu/MLS.
listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is legendary sports broadcaster Bill Mercer. On his long resume are gigs for the Texas Rangers, the Chicago White Sox, the Dallas Cowboys, and WCCW Wrestling.
Here we go.
His new book is called Play-by-Play, Tales from a Sports Broadcasting Insider. Now, we're going to get to the wrestling in a minute.
Oh, good.
I want to talk for a minute about KRLD because...
Wonderful place.
Such an extraordinary time that you were there when... You not only did you come, you came to do you had a radio shift as well as TV, and you would do an eight hour announcing shift,
and then
you had a TV show at the end of the day, every day.
Yes,
and you would dress up in costume and introduce kids programming.
I was Colonel Radar.
Yeah, what sorts of things did Colonel Radar say?
I'm not sure. I don't like to remember that. It was because they put me in there because I fit in the suit.
You're like a shiny silver suit.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be science fiction kind of thing. Oh, I just introduced little snippets of, Buck Rogers or whatever we had there in the little hour program. And I even went out on some personal appearances and had kids that came up to me. But that was just a minor thing. We had to do everything. And we had everything was live, as you know. Commercials were live. Great stories about those days. I came into the station, and it had only been on the air 4 years. And I wonder why everybody was kind of goofy. It's because they were still learning this business. And so I joined in, and it was the wildest bunch of great guys and women. We had live cooking shows. We had live everything. It was just fantastic. Jim Underwood was one of my favorite people, and if you mention KRLD, they always talk about him.
He was the weatherman, right?
Yeah, weather and news and assistant news director and everything else that Jim could do. Excuse me. And he did commercials like we all did, live in the studio. Had a Kaiser car in there one day, and they had, you go in and you practice. And when he went on live, the door fell off. I had Bulldog Malt Liquor. And the guy wanted to put up an English bulldog, which I love English bulldogs. So we had an English bulldog. We practiced it. She sat up here beside me, and I had a bunch of empty cans of beer. And as soon as we went on and they cued me, I said, "Good evening, the sports." And this dog whipped around and kicked all the cans across the studio and landed in my lap with her backside facing the camera. So that was the kind of stuff that made that. You'll never have that again. They don't make those mistakes anymore.
But I think the great thing about that is I imagine the sort of training that gave you to handle anything that came at you.
Oh, yeah.
And we should say you also have a sort of bona fide journalism background. But at the assassination of the president in 1963, you sort of dropped all the sports stuff and everything else and for quite some time did full-on straight journalism and some amazing work. I've seen the tapes.
Yeah, the thing that we had about the news department was that each of us had a job. Frank Lieber was there doing his sports. Wes Wise was there doing sports. Wes did my sports cast when I was doing baseball. Then I'd come off the road, but I didn't really go on the road. I recreated all the games in the studio. But then I would come in the fall, and we had the program called Comment, where we interviewed people every day, like yours, and took phone calls. Mm-hmm. It was the first one in Dallas. And it was wonderful. And I also was shy about interviewing, and that came on better. So, yeah, we just had a learning process. In that day when the president was shot, I was on the noon news, came over, and everybody was out, all working, and I, doing stories. So that evening then, because I was the only one that wasn't exhausted, I was sent over to the third floor of the police station. And when you watch TV today and you watch remotes and things, it's really – and that was our first live remote that I know of. They put the camera up in the third floor, ran the cable out to the truck, sent a microwave over, and then we even had videotape in those, just had gotten it. And then they sent that all to New York on the little cable. But I was up there with Howard Chamberlain, my dear old cameraman, with the camera at the end of the – and that was it. I had no format. I had no producer. I had no director. It was go up there and do it.
And no two-way radios or anything?
Nothing. Mm-hmm. And that was the way we worked. Go do that. And we'd go do it. Maybe it wasn't the greatest thing. Maybe it didn't hold up to journalism standards today. But we knew enough to go out and know that who, what, when, where, why, and when was really a good background to find out what's going on. And so I spent about 6 hours up there that night, running around, doing every interview and everything I could. It was an awesome week, couple of weeks. And those guys that are in that book are just fantastic. Bob Huffaker in particular, Wes Wise in particular, George R. Young, Fotog. And we had all sorts of things that have, and we didn't know each other really well after that because everybody started leaving. I left, George left, Wes ran for mayor and won that. Bob became a PhD, and so we came together 40 years later and started telling stories.
And that book is When the News Went Live, which you were also a co-author on.
I have a chapter, yeah.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. The email address is think@kera.org.
Let me ask you a question.
Is Bill Mercer? Sure, this never happens.
The name of this book is, and I've already thrown this over to Jeannie.
Mm-hmm.
The name of this book now is Play by Play, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? The original name, but I have to give credit to Mike Capps again, was, and now I want your honest opinion, Bats, Balls, and Body Slams.
You know, I'm not sure that we, I think we would have seen it and thought, this is not for an NPR station.
Isn't that great, though?
I kind of like play-by-play, colon, you got to have a colon in it.
Oh, yeah,
associated
have a colon.
With public broadcasting.
Nice. Yeah.
Play-by-play, Bats, Balls, and Body Slams.
Yeah, that would have been good. That would have been good. But they changed this without my permission, without even telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think play-by-play is going to be hard to sell because you probably look at it, oh, I don't want to read about play-by-play. And it's not really about play-by-play. It's a history.
It is a history. And I think what's really interesting, Bill, is that it's not – you say it's sort of your autobiography, but it's not about you really at all. In fact, I found myself wanting more Bill Mercer because it's a lot of great stories about a lot of people that you worked with.
Well, when Jeanette Harris, our dear lady who – got Bob Huffaker to write When the News Went, and then he got us to write our chapters. She called me after we met each other, and she said, our board, whatever that is, has decided you should write a memoir. I said, I'm not going to write a memoir. I read memoirs. I did this. I did that. I did all this by myself. I'm this so great. And you know, we don't do much of this without somebody helping us. I didn't get a job without somebody saying, would you like to try for it? And you can have it. So, you know, I didn't go to Cowboys and say, I'm going to take this job. They auditioned me. Anyhow, that was what bothered me. And so I said, okay, Jeanette, we'll put some history of the first wrestling match on radio is in 1922 on a Wichita, Kansas radio station, that kind of stuff. And then how things developed and how they have developed today. And I wanted to put everybody in that book who has been nice to me or not so nice to me, and who I love and who I don't particularly love, like Harry. But that's the way I decided to write it and let it fall. And if somebody doesn't like it, that my memory works pretty well for certain things.
The title, as it stands, is Play-by-Play, Tales from a Sports Broadcasting Insider by Bill Mercer. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's talk to Dr. Don Beck in Denton. Hi.
Oh, Don.
Oh, Bill, I love your book. I've read it. I bought 10 copies to send to friends.
Hey, Don.
Yes.
Just buy 10 more because they're hard to find. Hey, thank you so much, Don. You're a wonderful guy.
Well, if I want to confirm, Chris, all these stories about Bill Mercer. Coaches have coaching tribes, you know, the one been their assistants and the whole kind of group of them. And Mercer does. To me, he's the ideal college professor. He walks the talk. He teaches by example. And he's a magnificent human being. And I just thrilled in the book because I was there. I was on the athletic committee at UNT at the time. So I witnessed directly his mischief. Let me tell you, he was full of it.
Okay, now don't go too far here.
Well, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Don.
Let's talk a little bit about, you were telling me earlier that when you have new students in, you like to scare the heck out of them. In terms of making sure that they're going to be prepared and sort of know what's coming. What myth about this career is the first one you want to shatter for them?
Preparation. Mm-hmm. Red Barber's book, The Broadcasters, I take the last two chapters out. Preparation, coordination, concentration, and all the other things that he talks about. Not being a homer. There are two teams on the field. Be fair. Impartial. So we start out, and the first qualification in my class is that you will, like this fall, record a live, complete football game in a stadium every week. Take your tape recorder out, build your spotting boards, and sit there and do a live football game into your recorder.
So they actually call the game as an assignment.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's it, every week. If they don't, that depends on how their grade comes out at the end. Plus, I'm subjective grader. Subjective in the fact that, you know, when you're in this business, you listen to somebody, I don't like him. Well, that's subjective. For some reason, you don't like this way he sounds or this way or that way. That's the same way I grade. You got to sound, to have an A in my class, you have to sound well enough, prepared, and have the ability to obtain a job on a small market radio station at the end of that semester. I do guarantee the students, without promising anything in return, that they will sound better at the end of the semester than at the beginning. The other part of this is that they have to do a sportscast weekly. They have to write it and record it. They have to do a vocabulary list to improve their vocabulary every week, 25 to 30 words, and use those words in the broadcast and on the sportscast. Many, it kind of got to be an inside joke that we'd have 20 students come in at the beginning of the first day and end up with 15 or less who decided this is not exactly what I thought this was going to be. You might as well say it's hard. This is the hardest thing they'll ever do in their life, sitting in that stadium in the cold and the wet and whatever, recording a game. And if they can do it that way and if they have the passion for it, hey, we'll go.
Can you tell early on the ones who actually have the potential to have a real career and the ones who will go off and be a chemist or something?
You have some students like Craig Way or Dave Barnett. Craig's down at UT. Dave Barnett was the most amazing young man. I didn't know what I was going to teach him. It's just amazing. Sometimes that happens. And he was the youngest person, 21 years old, I think, when he was the Dallas Mavericks play-by-play man. There are a few like that, but rarely. The ones that some of them you have a – I never tell them you can't do it. I never tell a student you can't do it. I had a general manager tell me one time, you'll never make it in this business. And I went back the next year and broadcast a game in his town and went up and said, hi, I'm back. So I don't tell any of them you can't make it. I just say, look, you got a lot of room to work. If you want to do this – you go out and practice and practice and practice. You can send me a tape. I'll listen to it. There are some I know from the beginning that I think they're going to do it. And the middle group is the hardest part, you know, encouraging them, keeping them on track, saying, come on, you can do this. You know how that is. And they make mistakes. There has to be a place to make mistakes, and that's in class. And that's just what we try to do and polish these guys up as they go through. And women. We have a lot of women taking play-by-play.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Bill Mercer is my guest. His new book is Play by Play, Tales from a Sports Broadcasting Insider. Let's talk to Norm in Dallas. Hi, Norm.
Hi, Chris. How are you? This is Norm Hitzkus.
Hey, Norm.
I do a talk show in town, and I just wanted your audience to know how many lives Bill Mercer has positively affected. Over the years, dozens and dozens of his students have gone on into this business, and there's a reason for that. It's because Bill has devoted his life to being just a superb broadcaster, and he set a wonderful example for all of us coming up through this town.
Norm, what do you see in these kids that have been taught by Bill that is different from other students?
Well, I personally work with some of them down at the Ticket, George Dunham and Craig Miller. And the people that come through Bill's program know what it's about. They don't arrive at a radio station with that awestruck look and, oh, gee, I didn't know I'd have to do this or that. Bill's right. Preparation and knowing what to expect and knowing that a football game may be 3 hours and 30 minutes and it may have been decided 30 minutes into the game. You've got 3 more hours to try to keep that game interesting, and that has to do with preparation and observation and insight and evaluation. And Bill's just been a legend in this area for a long, long time.
Norm, great to hear from you. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Norm.
Thanks. See you, Bill.
There is the greatest sports reporter that this town has ever had. The man has a mind that keeps everything, and he's been very complimentary to me. But I tell you, that is the epitome of a sports reporter right there, Norm Hiskus.
You know, Norm mentioned something about, you know, knowing half an hour into a 3.5 hour football game sort of where it's going. Do you have to watch a game differently? I mean, obviously you have to keep track of more, but when you're calling a game, do you have to watch it in a different way than you would just to sort of enjoy it? Can you enjoy it when you're reporting it?
Let me see now. I can't enjoy a game. I've been in it so long, I can't just go out and watch games much anymore.
You can't enjoy them, period, sort of.
No, I have to be working on it. And I sit there and do play-by-play in my head. I can watch my granddaughter play basketball because I'm interested in how she's developing. I enjoy it. And when you have a game that's out of hand, like North Texas beating 79-13 or something the other day, not unexpected, really. But that's the point where it really tests you so you don't sound like you're ready to die out there. You know, you've got to talk about, well, this is the beginning of a new era of Todd Dodge, who's an outstanding human being, a wonderful coach. And let's talk about the individuals of this team and what they had. And you can kind of slide a little bit more and talk. And again, you don't do the Harry Carey thing about, oh, well, I knew this was going to happen. You know, you don't get excited. You got to enjoy the game. Like you said, do you enjoy it? Yeah, I enjoy it. And when they got out of hand, you just have to ride with them. And, boy, I tell you, when you're doing a baseball game, can you imagine the poor Baltimore broadcaster when the Rangers beat them 30-3?
Yeah, it's tough to maintain enthusiasm
at
that point,
yeah,
I'm sure.
If you're on the head. And I've had some of those, not 30, but I've first year of the Rangers. Don Drysdale, it's in the book there, you know, walked in and said, we're 30-some-odd games out of first place. What the heck do we talk about? And I said, well, we just talk about baseball and have fun. So that's what we did.
Bill Mercer is here. You can join our conversation after the break by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org. I do promise after this we will get to talk a little bit about the WCCW and all of the secrets that are held there, and we'll return in just a minute.
KFAB.
Funding for Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, offering adults an opportunity to think for credit. Details on the web at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is legendary Texas sports broadcaster Bill Mercer. He's been the announcer for the Texas Rangers, the Chicago White Sox, the Dallas Cowboys, among other teams. Also, he was the official announcer for WCCW Wrestling throughout part of the 80s. And this was where I had a sister who was really into wrestling when she was quite young.
Jeff Whittington, too.
Here. Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, he was just saying that he would, Jeff just told us he would sneak out of church on Sundays and go to the youth room and
way to go, Jeff.
And watch WCC wrestling with you. How did you decide, okay, this is something I'll do?
I didn't decide that. When I had my first job, a good job in Muskogee, the second job actually, but the one where I did all the sports, about a week into it, they said, oh, we forgot to tell you, you're doing a live wrestling program on once a week from the auditorium in Muskogee. I said, well, I've never seen wrestling. I don't know a thing about it. Oh, well, you can go down there and learn the holes. So I went down there and met the promoters, and Danny McShane and Wild Red Berry, you don't know them, but they were two great wrestlers. So they showed me hammerlocks and headlocks and spinning toe holes and all that stuff.
So they actually demonstrated so
you
know what they were.
Yeah, yeah, on me.
Did they really?
Oh, yeah, sure. They didn't hurt me, but they let you know that, hey, I can really hurt you if I want to.
And you're not, we should say here, if you'll forgive, you're not a big guy to have these giant wrestlers sort of.
I was 5'7" officially in the Navy. I'm 5'5 now. I'm getting older. We're all losing height. But anyway, yeah, I was a little guy, or am a little guy. So I did that wrestling program every month or whenever it was on. I think it was a month. And, you know, that brought me to Dallas. Hugh Neal, a dear friend of mine in Tyler Radio, came through KRLD and they said, we need a wrestling announcer. And Hugh said, I know the greatest one in the world. I said, Hugh, you might have gone a little overboard. But anyway, I auditioned, rode the train down and back, auditioned, they hired me. And that's how I started, doing wrestling at KRLD, at the Sportatorium Live on Tuesday nights.
Now, is your voice for announcing wrestling very different from the one that you use?
No, I just project more. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not real loud. Like, I guess I'm projecting now. But around a microphone, I always project. But I just did the same thing. Now, there are guys who used to do wrestling differently. But I decided, what the heck? I know how to do play-by-play, and I did wrestling play-by-play. So I'm just going to do it the same way. But you got to look for other – I mean, doing it on television is like doing football on television. You don't do the obvious. Occasionally, you know, you'll finish up with the obvious. But you got to know little other things about the wrestlers and about what's going on, and you know the outcome. I'm sorry, fans, but you do. You know the outcome.
Does this still surprise people?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Some people don't believe it was, you know, the outcome. In fact, somebody the other day, Bronco Lubitsch died. Great, great man and a wonderful wrestler in his time and referee at Sportatorium and all wrestling around here. And somebody came up to me and said, do you suppose Bronco knew how the matches were going to come out? I said, you know, if he didn't, the matches were never going to end. Or something would go wrong and the wrong guy would win. It's basically planned, but they are such wonderful actors and athletes. How can you knock it? Oh, it's fake. No, it's not. On the back of the book, that picture of me being held aloft by Wild Bill Irwin,
yes.
That hurts. I was up there, and that hurts. And I tell you, it hurts to go diving off the top of the rope into the floor. It hurts like Kevin Bonnier hit over the head with a steel chair by Chris Adams and blood running down right in front of me on the car. It hurts. And they are wonderful actors. They are wonderful athletes, and they're tough as nails. I mean, Killer Carl Cox is one of the toughest guys that you – I mean, if you wanted to have a fight, he's the guy you want in front of you.
And you guys still hang, right?
Oh, he and I are great friends. He called me the other day. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how much I love this book. We got to go out and talk about this thing. He's just great.
And you actually call – do you return his call and say, hey, Killer Carl?
Oh, I never
– Bill?
His name is – God, what is it? Herb Gerwig. I didn't know that until I wrote the book. But I never wanted to know the guy's real name.
So you want to call him Killer
Carl? I knew his name wasn't really Killer Carl Cox. But if I knew his real name, Herb might jump out while I'm broadcasting. And they would say, who's he? So I never ask anybody when they had these different kind of model, you know, that what your real name was, because it was confusing.
Bill Mercer is here. Our number is 1-800-933-5372. Let's talk to Gus in Denton. Hi, Gus.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, I got a question for Mr. Mercer.
Okay.
I'm a longtime fan of both his and of wrestling, and I would like to know if the Masked Monastic is still wrestling.
Wherever you go, there you are, right? You know, I think he's dead. Somebody told me. I don't keep up with it that much anymore, but I do believe he's dead. I'm not sure.
Do you follow any of this mixed martial arts thing, which I guess is the new wave?
That is brutal stuff. I can't take it. That's just too much. And I don't like today's modern wrestling, all respect to Mr. McMahon. It's too – I was going to use the word phony. We always had a storyline in ours, you know, and I think that made us have a more believable adventure. World-Class Championship Wrestling was one of the – and I say this – take myself out of it, was one of the finest programs of its type I think I've been around. That 3 or 4 years, we had all the beautiful good guys, and we had all the terrible heels. And they were just like a mix, you know, like taking those actors and putting them on Friends or Seinfeld. They came together like that. And we had this fantastic program. Plus, we added little personal things like the little features we did out of, with the various guys. And it was, you know, as I say, and everybody laughs and introduces me, I'm the fourth most popular TV personality in Israel behind the Von Erichs at that time.
There was a survey, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You were, was it strange to you to become really a recognizable star for something that you did at sort of toward the end of the years that you were broadcasting all the time?
Kind of fun. You know, I've always had it kind of like a hobby. Yeah, it just amazed me. My daughter would finally said, can we go someplace that you won't have somebody ask your autograph? Because it reached that proportion. We're sitting in Las Vegas in a casino having a drink. Waiter comes up and practically throws himself over the table. You're Bill Mercer with World Class Wrestling. And this happened all over. You know, the war in Lebanon would stop while our program was on the air. The promoter told us that. He said, it's amazing what that program. In Israel, one of the towns over there, my mind slips, but they closed down the town to go to all the houses to watch that wrestling program. That's how it just, it was amazing the way it bloomed up. I'd walk across the campus, kids from Mideast, I'd see them, and I'd say, uh-oh. They'd look at me, and they come running across the campus. You're divided on wrestling, because they'd seen it in Lebanon and Israel and Jordan and all those places over there. Fantastic. It was just amazing what happened.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Michael in Dallas. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Bill.
Yes.
By the way, I really love Think. I don't miss that. That's my program for the on the way into work.
Well, thank you.
And if you were sitting across from Chris, you'd be sure you'd listen to it more often.
I bet. No, I was appreciating your comment about the Harry Carey, because I was an Astro fan growing up. I grew up in Houston, got married, and had to watch all my games in Baton Rouge because that's where my job was.
Uh-huh.
And I used to turn on the Cubs game when the Astros were playing on WGN, and then find a radio station because I couldn't stand hearing Harry.
Right, right. I understand.
Because he was always nothing but negative about any of the players on the opposing team, and the Cubs could do no wrong.
Yeah, but
were like, I appreciate that, pointing that out. I says, I think a commentator needs to be fair and balanced.
Well, thanks so much for your call, Michael.
He was hard on his own players.
Was it hard for you not to play favorites?
No, I do occasionally. I mean, like Travis Metcalf out at Frisco, mm-hmm. Third baseman. We started calling him the glove. Beautiful, beautiful third baseman. That position, and you know baseball, I suppose, mm-hmm. is so hard to play. He made it look like ballet. I mean, it was gorgeous. Scooped the ball, one motion, and the ball's across the infield. Like old Brooks Robinson at Baltimore. Yeah, you play favorites. But it's something you have to temper with the other guys, because just one player, you know, in baseball, it takes a whole infield to make the defense. And so there's Casey Benjamin and there's Duran at second and the guy at first. And they all work together. But there are favorites. And Wilbur Wood, the old knuckleballer at Chicago, was one of my favorites. And Bucky Dent, who was a young kid then. So, yeah, you have favorites. Bobby Gritch, I mentioned some names, fans, so you remember these, the Dallas-Fort Worth Spurs, Don Baylor, who played in the Spurs here. They're your favorites, but you dwell on each person as they come up. You talk about how he stands, how he holds, where his feet are, what he's doing, how well he does this thing. He's got a 10-game winning hitting streak, you know, that sort of thing.
It's interesting, though, because clearly you have this great respect for all of them as athletes, and yet you almost can't approach them as fans. You can't be a fan of these athletes as individuals.
I can't be a fan of the game. Mm-hmm. That hurts my students when I say, okay, guys, you're in this class. You're no longer fans. You're going to be a broadcaster. And you love the team you're with, but you don't react to it like a fan, because a fan sees nothing except the good side or the bad referee or official's call. So you are becoming a broadcaster, and you try to do that Red Barber impartiality and go with it and just enjoy the heck out of it.
Did taking on teaching change the way you approached your work even outside the classroom?
It got better. I wish I'd have taught earlier, because I would have my students critique me when I came in, and they would do that on Monday when I was doing minor league baseball. And so I'd come in, and they said, yeah, well, you said not to yell and scream, and they hit a grand slam, and you just went off over the like a volcano. I said, well, okay, thank you. I'll write that down, so I'm careful. I think I got better by working harder so my students would understand how it is. And probably I worked hard as it was, but even harder, because I knew people were listening. You don't think about the people listening when you're broadcasting, really. You know, one person you're talking to out there.
Was this a tough job? You have four kids? Is it
four kids?
Four kids. Was that a tough job to have a family and be out on the road and all over the place?
My wife and I celebrated our 60th wedding anniversary
Sunday. Congratulations.
Thank you. Well, I was on the road. I was not around Rock.
Oh, no.
And she said, you know, it's typical. And she was so great. She is so great. Because every time I'd leave town, go off on a cowboy trip or a baseball extended trip, somebody got hurt. And I'd find out and come home. I tell some friends of mine, I'm talking about getting married in this business, I said, you better sit down with your wife-to-be and tell them you're going to be gone a lot. And you're going to be gone more as people ask you to do things. It's a tough job for a wife and a mother. But my fortunate part was, in baseball, early on, I didn't leave town. I did the home games live. I did the out-of-town games from a studio at KRLD, recreating them.
Somebody asked about this via email. Did you have sound effects in the whole thing?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, we had sound effects. So it was kind of like wrestling.
You didn't know the outcome, hopefully.
Well, I didn't know the outcome then. But I was home every night. Mm-hmm. So that did help me. And I don't know if I had been on the road like the minor leaguers now go on the road for a week, 2 weeks. And that is tough. And it really is hard on a marriage. And it's hard on both of them. And if you have children, I had four, my three boys and my lovely daughter, who's a teacher of dyslexic children. They laugh about the fact, well, you know, he's not here. It's typical. He never was here. But they turned out really well, thanks to my wife.
And I guess you still take the same amount of pleasure doing the Riders games in Frisco as you did with the big league games. And
sure.
I'm wondering why that is.
It's baseball. It's high school baseball. It's little league baseball. It's baseball. And every level has its part of perfection. A ball, then they come up there. Double A ball, boy, that's good. And I was down at Triple A ball. Wow. There's that next step. Then the big leagues. And every level has you get better and better.
Mm-hmm.
And they go up and down. Some stick, some don't. Some are up, some back down to Triple A, some down to Double A. And if you keep up with baseball, that's the elevator that goes up and down. I think one team we were talking about a couple of years ago had 75 player changes.
Up and down through the different levels.
In 2 months. Because they're always moving. Somebody's hurt. Somebody can't play well. They change. Somebody's hitting well, so they move them up. It's a tough business.
As is broadcasting, I guess, if you're in sports. Bill Mercer, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
The new book is called Play by Play, Tales from a Sports Broadcasting Insider. And there's also a website. It is BillMercerSports.com.
Is it?
That's what it says right here.
Oh, I've forgotten about that.
Okay. Try it and see what you get.
I'll try it.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro, with production assistance from Maggie Conklin. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.